Chapter 2. So I'll lead up to that text, and then we'll go through that text responsively. Because you have listed here 10 through 14. What did you do up to 9 last time? Because that has a purport.
Yeah.
And so. Okay, so I'll first read texts 10 through 13. Text 10. Evam saptastu guru na pratyagrina kritanjali adharaya dratam vira urdvareta muni priyam. Translation. When the hero Prishadra was thus cursed by his spiritual master, he accepted the curse with folded hands. Then, having controlled his senses, he took the vow of brahmacharya, which is approved by all great sages. Cow when he was trying to kill the tiger. Okay. Texts 11 through 13. Vasudeva bhagavati sarvatmane pare male ekantitvam gato bhakya sarva bhuta surit sama vimukta sangha santatma samyataksho parigraha yadvichchayo papanena kalpayan vritimatmana atmanyatmanamadaya jnana tripta samahita vichachara mahim etam Ajadanda Bhadirakrita. Translation. Thereafter, Prishadra gained relief from all responsibilities, became peaceful in mind, and established control over all his senses. Being unaffected by material conditions, being pleased with whatever was available by the grace of the Lord to maintain body and soul together, and being equal toward everyone, he gave full attention to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who is the transcendental supersoul, free from material contamination. Thus Prishadra, fully satisfied in pure knowledge, always keeping his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, achieved pure devotional service to the Lord and began traveling all over the world without affection for material activities, as if he were deaf, dumb, and blind. So, text 14, translation. With this attitude, Prishadra became a great saint, and when he entered the forest and saw a blazing forest fire, he took this opportunity to burn his body in the fire. Thus he achieved the transcendental spiritual world. Please repeat. With this attitude, Prishadra became a great saint. And when he entered the forest and saw a blazing forest fire, he took this opportunity to burn his body in the fire. Thus he achieved the transcendental spiritual world. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvata tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjina. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Prishadra, because of his karma, was cursed to take his next birth as a Shudra. But because he took to saintly life, specifically concentrating his mind always upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he became a pure devotee. Immediately after giving up his body in the fire, he reached the spiritual world, as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Mameti, as a result of his devotional situation. Devotional service performed by thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so powerful that although Prishadra was cursed, he avoided the terrible consequence of becoming a Shudra and instead returned home back to Godhead. As stated in the Brahma Samhita 554, Yastvindra Gopam Atavendra Maho Svakarma Bandhanu Rupa Palabhajana Matanoti Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Jabhakti Bhajam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Those who engage in devotional service are unaffected by the results of their material activities. Otherwise, everyone, from the smallest microbe up to the King of Heaven, Indra, is subject to the laws of karma. A pure devotee, being always engaged in the service of the Lord, is exempt from these laws. Oman Dhyana Timarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamyena Tasmayashri. With this attitude, Krishadra became a great saint, and when he entered the forest and saw a blazing forest fire, he took this opportunity to burn his body in the fire. Thus he achieved the transcendental spiritual world. So, the story here deals with the descendants of Manu. So, this is actually related to the whole question of the origin of human beings, because these persons, such as Krishadra, are sons of Vaivasvata Manu. So they're living on the earth, and they're human beings. However, Vaivasvata Manu is the son of Vivasvan, who is the sun god. So, the body of Vivasvan is not constructed in the same way as a human body. His body is built so that he can live in the sun. In fact, he's the source of energy in the sun globe. So, the body of Vivasvan, Srila Prabhupada has pointed out, is predominantly made of the fire element. So, if he appeared here on the earth and exhibited his full energy, then he'd burn up the earth, as a matter of fact. So, nonetheless, Vivasvan has a definite body, basically human bodily form, and one of his sons was Vaivasvata Manu. So, he had several different sons, and of course that's they're being discussed in this part of the Bhagavatam. One of his sons was Ikshvaku, who was the founder of a dynasty of kings called the Surya Vamsa. So another one is Prishadra. So the story of Prishadra is being mentioned here. So, it's interesting to see that he's living on the earth in human form. He was being asked to apparently guard the cows by his spiritual master, and accidentally he killed a cow, taking it to be a tiger. So, let's see. Yes, so his guru was Vishishta, in fact, who was a great rishi. And so Vishishta cursed him to become a shudra. So this was not a very good thing for him. So in due course of time, according to this karma, Krishadra would have taken birth as a shudra. And in that case, he probably would have committed more sinful activities due to association as a shudra, and thus he would have become more and more entangled in material existence. Of course, even as a kshatriya, there was danger of becoming entangled in material existence, and you can see from the very fact that he accidentally killed the cow that there's this kind of danger at all times in the material world. Basically, material existence is extremely dangerous. As one thing can lead to another. Because of accidentally killing the cow, you become a Shudra, and then as a Shudra, you associate with someone who's a drunkard, let's say, and then you also become a drunkard, and then you wind up taking an even more degraded birth, and eventually you wind up in some hellish condition of life. So that can happen to people. In fact, we can see, even within one human life, that people can become degraded very easily. A person may start out in a very auspicious situation in life, and through bad association, they take to intoxication or drugs, illicit sex, and so forth, and they wind up in a very degraded condition. So if a person degrades their consciousness, then their next body will be chosen appropriately. So the situation in the material world is indeed dangerous. So this Prashadra apparently understood that, and he took the opportunity of being cursed by Vasishta to completely terminate his material existence by becoming a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, of course, one interesting point is that at the very beginning of the dynasties descending from the sun god, there was knowledge of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that knowledge was there in the beginning. Periodically, that knowledge is reinstated in human society. But in the course of time, the knowledge tends to be destroyed as a result of material developments. And so repeatedly, Krishna makes arrangements for knowledge of devotional service to the Supreme Lord to be introduced into human society. So, so Prashadra took to this, and this involved controlling his senses, giving up everything except what is essential for maintaining the body, and meditating on the Supreme Lord. So it says he gave, being unaffected by material conditions, being pleased with whatever was available by the grace of the Lord to maintain body and soul together, and being equal toward everyone, he gave full attention to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. So, another factor here is this phrase, being equal to everyone. So, another problem that can occur in the matter of pursuing devotional service is that one will become entangled in difficult interrelationships with other persons. So, one can quarrel with people, and so forth. So Prashadra also avoided that. He simply related to everyone with equanimity. And so he was able to focus his mind on Krishna. So when he had attained a advanced devotional state as a result of doing this, it says here that he took the opportunity to leave his body in the forest fire. So, the indication is that he didn't try to save himself. There are other cases where things like that have happened. For example, there's the story of Vritrasura. Vritrasura, this is also a story of a curse, actually. He had, in his previous life, this personality was King Chitraketu. So the story is that King Chitraketu had some fantastic number of queens. He was one of these exceedingly opulent kings. But he wasn't able to have a son, so apparently he was sterile. And this was not very good because a person following the Varnashram Dharma in the role of a king should definitely have a son in order to continue the dynasty of kings. And also the son will be able to perform the Shraddha ceremony for the father after his death. And as a result of that, he becomes saved from consequences of bad karma. So he wanted a son but couldn't get one. So finally, let's see, what was it? I think it was Angira Muni, one of those, was it Angira? Came to him and in due course gave him the benediction to have a son. So he obtained a son from one of his queens. As a result, the others became jealous and poisoned the son. So he died, and the result was that there was incredible lamentation. King Chitraketu became totally devastated at the fact that his son had died. The queens who had poisoned him also were crying and everything, just to keep up a good front. So then Angira Muni came back, and I think he was accompanied by Narada, wasn't he? I think Narada Muni came with him at that point, and explained to him the whole principle of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And at this point, King Chitraketu was willing to listen because he was in a state of material lamentation. He wasn't thinking at that point of material enjoyment, whereas previously he was so attached to the idea of having a son that the concept of devotional service would not have been particularly appealing to him. So at this point, in which his material fortunes took a definite downturn, he had the good fortune of receiving instruction in devotional service, and so he took advantage of that. And as a result, he was actually able to obtain the darshan of Lord Sankarshan, and he became a great devotee. However, then the thing that happened with him was that he was traveling around the universe in a vimana. Interestingly enough, he was accompanied by women, but they were all chanting the holy names of the Lord. So his karma was still manifest in that sense, apparently. But in any case, he came into the region of Lord Shiva and saw that Parvati, or Durga, was sitting on the lap of Lord Shiva. And so he made some joking remark about this, how Lord Shiva was attached to his wife or something like that. And this wasn't actually intended as an offense, and Lord Shiva wasn't offended, but Parvati was definitely offended by this. So she cursed him that he would become an asura. So in due course, and actually King Chitraketu accepted the curse. He didn't become greatly aggrieved and start crying or anything like that. But he accepted the curse, and in due course he was born as Vritrasura. So the story there is that, let's see, well, Indra had been getting into some trouble. You may have heard about Indra. He's the king of the Devas, so he occupies an extremely opulent position. So because of his great material opulence, even though he's a devotee of Lord Vishnu, he has a tendency to fall into some unfortunate material activities. So on this particular occasion, he had killed his guru. So his guru was the son of a demigod named Tvasta. So Tvasta, being rather angry at this, performed a sacrifice in which he summoned up from the fire of sacrifice a being who would become the enemy of Indra. So in pronouncing the mantra to summon up this being, he unfortunately mispronounced it slightly, and instead he summoned up a being of whom Indra would be the enemy. So this was Vritrasura. So it's interesting that powerful beings can be summoned up from fires if you know how to do it. Actually, there's a system behind this. About the virtual reality concept as applied to the universe. Has anyone here heard of virtual realities? Who hasn't? Yes. Okay. Anyway, a virtual reality is a world created in a computer. What you do is set up programs which calculate everything that goes into a particular environment. For example, consider this room. You could have the computer calculate the shape and form of every different item in the room. This microphone, the pillars, the ceiling, the fans, everything. So then you have a sensory hookup so that the senses of a person are channeled into the senses of a body within that environment. So the person sees as though he's in that body. So the way it's done right now is rather crude. Basically, the person wears goggles which have TV screens that come in front of the eyes, so that then the computer is programmed to compute the scene from the point of view of the eyes in this body inside the virtual reality. And those images are placed on the TV screens. So the person sees what he would see if, in fact, he was in that virtual body. So the apparatus is set up so that the movements of the person's head and his arms and his hands and so forth are recorded by the computer and used to control the movements of the virtual body. So the result is that when he turns his head, what he sees is what he would see if he was in the virtual body and he turned his head. Or when he reaches out with his hand, then what he feels is what he would feel if he was reaching out in the virtual environment in that virtual body. So this creates the illusion that you're in the virtual body. So, and it works pretty well. So the result of this is that once you're hooked up with the virtual reality system, you seem to be in a body in this virtual reality, but that's not actually your body. So you have the illusion that you're a particular body, but actually you aren't. So the point then is, actually, we're already in a virtual reality, namely this material universe. In fact, it's even described in the same way, because this material universe is referred to as the world of Maya, and Maya means illusion. Well, virtual in virtual reality means that it's an illusory reality. It doesn't really exist. However, although it doesn't really exist, the computer exists, which is used to create the virtual reality. If you didn't have that computer, then you couldn't have the virtual reality. So similarly, this world of illusion, or Maya, is created by, you could call, the ultimate supercomputer, which is Krishna's external energy. So this external energy generates all these illusory forms. And the senses of the conditioned souls are linked up with temporary bodies created out of this illusory energy of Krishna. Mama Maya Duratyaya. So this Krishna says this energy of mine is extremely difficult to overcome. So actually you can see, if you had a person projected into a virtual reality generated with a computer, it would also be rather difficult for the person to overcome that, because he would be stuck in it. Actually, if the person was completely hooked up with the virtual reality, then any movement he made with his body would simply become a movement of the virtual body in the virtual reality. So there would be no way to get out, because how would you get out? There's no exit door from the virtual reality into this reality. Everywhere you go, you're just in the virtual reality. And conditions could become unpleasant there. It might be interesting at first, but then you might get into difficult situations. This would be an excellent method of torturing people. The point then is, actually, we are in a virtual reality right now. So I started the virtual reality discussion when I came to this point of creating bodies out of fires by pronouncing mantras, because one may tend to think that that sounds pretty fantastic. I mean, how would that work? But one thing you can see with computers is that just with even an ordinary computer, you just type in a command and hit the return key, and immediately all kinds of things start happening with the computer. Like if you're running WordStar, you type WS, hit the return key, and now the word processor comes up, and you can edit your files or whatever. So that means that with computers, mantras are effective. That is, by producing a certain word, the whole system responds in a very definite way. So the universe is also set up like that. Because in fact, this universe, you could say, is like the ultimate supercomputer. And just as a computer has a programmer, so this universe also has a programmer. Actually, there's a series of programmers who work at different levels within the universe. So actually, Mahavishnu is the ultimate programmer for all the different universes. And he has his assistants. In this universe, Lord Brahma does a lot of the programming, you might say. He's the systems analyst for this universe. And so on. So one of the consequences of this is that words can have an effect, assuming that you have the appropriate password or status. With a computer, actually the way many operating systems are set up, before you can use the system, you have to type in an appropriate password, which is supposed to be secret. Normally this password is only given to a person who has obtained some access to the computer. For example, you may have to pay a large sum of money, and then you obtain access. Or maybe you'll be on the student body of a university, and because you've signed up for a certain programming course, then you get so many hours access to the computer at a certain level, and so on. So the access to the computer can be at various levels. There would, say, be student access, in which you can use it for a certain number of hours a week, and you have access to certain files only. And then the professor will have much greater access to the computer. And then the person who's in charge of the whole computer facility will have access to all the files. He can do anything. In fact, in the Unix operating system, he's called the super user. So I think whoever designed the Xenix operating system probably knew something about Krishna consciousness. It could happen. Because that position corresponds to the super soul in the universe. The super soul has total access to the whole system. Different demigods have partial access. Persons who acquire mystic powers, they would be like, say, a student who gets reasonably high-level access. And then persons of bad karma, who don't have much power, have an extremely limited access to the operating system. So this demigod Tvasta had a fairly high level of access, so he was able to create bodies simply by pronouncing mantras. And it's not that the word itself just creates the body, but by speaking the appropriate word, because he had the appropriate access to the system would go into action, according to the, ultimately, to the potency of Lord Vishnu, and the appropriate body would be created. Of course, if you do this, you have to give the right instruction. And Tvasta, in fact, mispronounced the mantra slightly. So the result was that an extremely powerful body was produced with the destiny that Indra would be the destroyer of this body, instead of this body being the destroyer of Indra. So Chitraketu, because he had been cursed by Durga to become an asura, his soul and subtle body was placed in this body generated by Tvasta. So there's a universal management system which places souls in appropriate bodies. And you can see that this has to be quite a sophisticated system, because consider the number of bodies that are dying at any given moment. So every time a body dies, the soul and subtle body in that body have to be placed in some new body. So at the same time, you can consider the birth rate throughout the entire universe. Bodies in different forms are continually being born. So that means souls have to be supplied. So there's a continual transfer of souls from bodies that are dying to bodies that are being born, and this has to be done according to the karma of those souls. So it's quite a complex managerial problem. So there are demigods who are involved with this. So Chitraketu's soul and subtle body was placed within the body of Vritrasura, and so he now became Vritrasura. So Chitraketu, though, was a pure devotee, and because he was a pure devotee, even though he was in the body of a demon, he still had devotional consciousness. So it turned out, though, that he was the leader of the asuras. And so the natural thing that you do if you're the leader of the asuras is that you attack Indra, who is the leader of the demigods. Because it seems that for hundreds of millions of years, there have been cosmic battles between the devas and the asuras. It's the ultimate Star Wars scenario. So actually, some of these science fiction ideas actually come from the Vedic literature, ultimately. They come from various routes. Some of them come into European folklore and so forth, and they wind up in modern-day science fiction. But ultimately, they're coming from the Vedic literature. So for thousands and millions, hundreds of millions of years, the forces of light have been battling the forces of darkness. So it's the battle of the devas and the asuras. So this is going on. Periodically, there are consequences down here on the earth. For example, occasionally, when the asuras have been defeated in the heavens, they've decided to get revenge by trashing the earth planet. This has happened a couple of times. For example, on one occasion, the Danavas were defeated in the heavenly planets, and they instituted a program of coming to the earth at night. Actually, they set up a base within the ocean, and they would come out at night and kill saintly persons, persons trying to engage in religious practices. So they would go to ashrams at night and kill all the monks and sages and so forth. And what they would do is, it was described, they would drain all the fluids out of the body and also the marrow from their bones and just leave a desiccated corpse, which would be found during the morning. So they were pursuing this policy. And people were becoming horrified by this. In fact, it was described that people were heading for the hills. Some people were even living behind waterfalls, it was described, in order to hide, but it didn't help. So, anyway, ultimately, the demigods had to come and intervene and deal with the problem. That leads to yet another story, namely the story of the draining of the ocean. Anyway, going back to Tvasta, Vritrasura, who was actually King Chitraketu, engaged in a battle with Indra, and he actually forced Indra to kill him. This was the starting point for this story, because Prishadra took the advantage of the forest fire to get rid of his body, because he knew that at that point he would go back to Godhead. So, and there was nothing further to do with his body in this world, so he took the opportunity to eliminate it. So Vritrasura did a very similar thing. He attacked Indra and forced Indra to kill him. Now the ironic thing that happened there was that Indra understood from what Vritrasura was saying that Vritrasura was actually a pure devotee. So naturally at this point when Indra realized this, he didn't want to kill him. But Vritrasura forced him to do it anyway, and also chastised him for being such a materialist, because Indra had in fact gotten into considerable trouble due to his material activities. So Vritrasura gave him a thoroughgoing lecture on the evils of material activities, and then forced Indra to kill him with his thunderbolt weapon. And as a result of that, because Indra then killed a pure devotee, he really got some bad karmic consequences. So these are some of the difficulties involved in being Indra. So anyway, I guess I'll tell you what happened with those demons who were coming out at night and killing people. They were hiding within the ocean. They had a base underneath the sea. So the demigods came down to deal with the situation, and they said, well, we have to drain the ocean in order to gain access to these demons. So they approached the sage Agastya Muni, and he, at their request, drank the ocean. So the ocean was removed. And then they were able to attack the Kaliya Danavas. That was the particular group of asuras who were engaged in these activities. The problem then was that the ocean was gone. So they asked Agastya Muni to restore the ocean, but he said that, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I've digested that water. So you'll have to find some other expedient for restoring the ocean. So just thought I'd mention that story. Ultimately, the ocean was restored when the Ganges came down to the earth. That is described. Interesting point, though, is according to modern scientific understanding, it's understood that the Mediterranean Sea was once completely dry. Now, I don't know if that corresponds to the same draining of the ocean, but what they've done is with ships, they drop basically a hollow pipe down to the sea bottom, which takes a core of the strata on the sea bottom. And they found that all across the floor of the Mediterranean Sea, there are extremely thick salt deposits of the kind you find in deserts. So the conclusion they come to is that it looks as though the entire Mediterranean Sea was a desert at one time. And also when they look, when they use echo sounding in the, say, Nile Valley, they find there's a tremendous canyon beneath the alluvial deposits in the Nile Valley, bigger than Grand Canyon, which would indicate that the Nile River was flowing through a huge canyon right down to the bottom of the Mediterranean at one time. Also, I was checking not too long ago, I'm living in San Diego, so I happened to get some map showing the coast, showing the ocean floor off the coast of California. And it's interesting that there are canyons going as far as 2 miles to 2 miles depth off the coast of California. And the geologists analyzing that, well, there's a book in which some geologists were trying to explain what could have been the cause of these canyons. And so they considered various possibilities and concluded that the most likely explanation for the existence of these canyons is that they were cut by rivers. But since they go down to 2 miles below sea level, that means the ocean would have had to have been 2 miles lower at that time. So anyway, the point being there that some of the fantastic things you read about in the Vedic literature might just turn out to be true. So believe it, we actually live in a pretty fantastic world. And the conditions that we happen to see today have not always prevailed. At different times over many, many millions of years, the conditions have been quite different. So I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments? Yeah?
There's been a lot of news.
Mm-hmm.
One of the scholars, they sent a satellite around Mars. And it disappeared about Mars. It disappeared. Do you have any comments on
that? It disappeared?
Yeah.
Does that mean that it just, its radio failed, or?
Yeah, they don't have any communication with it. They don't even know if it exists or what happened to it.
Hmm. Well, there are various possibilities. Now, the simplest mundane explanation would be that one tiny little wire in the satellite, due perhaps to repeated heating and cooling or something like that, snapped. And as a result, now the satellite doesn't work. That'd be one explanation. That can happen when you spend $1 billion on a satellite. But I don't know. So, now another possibility is that someone removed it. Of course, another possibility is that they don't have a satellite out there. The question is, what is the actual truth and how can you find out? It's not so easy to find out the truth about some of these things. So this was a satellite that was supposed to orbit Mars. Well, okay. Well, Prabhupada had some doubts about that. Now, on the one hand, to get, let's say, a metal object to travel over X number of millions of miles of space should be possible in principle. Because if you get it going at a certain speed, then it eventually should cross the designated distance, assuming that you can aim it properly so that it gets to its destination. However, there are other factors involved in space travel. One is that there are other beings who have control over what is going on out in space, and they will not necessarily allow you to send something out there. Specifically, demigods are in control of the different things that are going on in outer space. That was the point made by Srila Prabhupada. He made the point that, for example, to go to the moon planet, a certain karma is required. So if you don't have the karma, then you won't be allowed to go. The same thing, same sort of thing that I was saying about the computer operating system. If you have paid enough money, then you can gain access to the computer. So you'll be given a certain password, and then you can use it. Otherwise, you can't do that. So Srila Prabhupada made the point that the persons with bad karma would not be able to travel into the heavens and visit other planets and so forth. So, that was the point that he made. Apart from that, to cover the distance should be possible.
Yes,
Pardon me?
Reason,
it is necessary to explain what the real truth is. That's what you're faced with. Because that is, in fact, the basic problem with the modern scientific situation. That extensive propaganda is made that, quite frankly, contradicts everything in the Bhagavatam. There's not just the question of whether we went to the moon or not. That's one question. But practically every single thing that you can read in the Bhagavatam is contradicted by modern science. So people are educated according to modern science. So then naturally, when they read about these stories in the Bhagavatam, including nearly everything that I was talking about in the class today, then they will tend to think...